So this is the fifth day of this 7-day retreat on Fettering the Natural Mind, the Path of Clear Seeing. By the way, what were those last lines on the on that? Before you got to the superiority, inferiority, what was the line just before that?
Let us transcend the boundaries of a delusive self.
There you go. That's what we're doing. See, two words there. Self, qualified by delusive. See, the teachings are in... We're getting them down in the meal chants. We get them up here. Please pay attention. Free from the delusive self. So over these past days, we have been looking at the self to make up our own mind whether it is delusive. We all come to this retreat, we all come to life with our own ideas. We have our personal ideas. We have the ideas that we've been given by our family, our society, our profession. We have religious ideas, we have philosophical ideas, we have psychological ideas, we have scientific ideas. We have lots of ideas about life, ourself, the mind, etc. Right? Everybody here has different ideas. And probably everybody here thinks their ideas are the most valid. But... to come to any type of realization, you have to let go of your ideas, even Buddhist ones. And the freshness of this path, of this direct path, it is inviting us to do that. It says, let go of all your ideas, all your thoughts, all your concepts, and look into, investigate your own experience. Because it is within your own experience that you are experiencing happiness or suffering. It is within your own experience that you're experiencing a whole range of positive emotions and a whole range of afflictive emotions. It is in the whole range of your experience that you are feeling yourself disconnected, alone, separate from, or the opposite. Right. Everything is arising, everything you experience, you are experiencing in your experience, right? And the teachers are telling us that everything we experience, we are experiencing within our mind and because of our mind. And so it is this very mind. What is our mind? That which is listening and seeing me right now. This is your mind. Everything you perceive, everything you think, everything you feel, every object to when it comes to any senses, you are aware of because of your mind. So that is why we need to take a fresh, deep look into our mind, and it's right here. In days of old, finding these teachings, it took work. You had to travel far distances. You had to do many preliminary practices. You were put through many tests. Right? Even myself, as insignificant, traveling in India in the 70s to receive these teachings. There were many hardships, nothing like many people experience, but life was not easy. When you have to endure hardship to receive something, it becomes more precious to you, and you have to have a strong aspiration. or else you can be very easily discouraged by the hardships. Right? It is easy for us. I mean, how did you get here? You signed up. And you didn't have to go through any preliminaries, you know. And I mean, the biggest hardship was coming up that hill. Right? This is not luxury, but we all have comfortable beds and we all have fresh linens. We have people, you know, we're like kings. People make us food, delicious food, right? So because it is so easy and so accessible, it is very easy not to value. Is that clear? These teachings are the most valuable thing in the universe. Why is that? Because they are the elixir that, if taken as directed, produces what used to be a suffering sentient being, produces a Buddha, an awakened one. Right. So, you know, how do you put a price on that? How do you put a price on that? We who put a price on everything. Over these past 5 days, there has been lots of teaching, explanation. Throughout the day, there has been much guidance and support for you in these practices. In the evening, we've had very lively practice, looking into the mind, the nature of mind, thoughts, self last night. But my sense is over these next 2 days, we need to quiet it down. You have to find your own aspiration, your own diligence, your own desire to be free. That has to come from within you. You know, the masters can give us the teachings, they can give us the practices, they can show us the way, they can demonstrate, but it's up to us to put it into practice. So over these next 2 days, not like it is going to be complete silence, but my hope is there'll be less, you've gotten the teachings. You've gotten the practices. They're fairly simple. If there are any questions about how to practice, we'll deal with them today. But over these next 2 days, this is where the fruit will be taken. It is up to you to both ripen the fruit and to pick the fruit. Is that clear? Or I and the other people would be doing you a disservice. Again, the Buddha himself said to his disciples, I'd love to do it for you. I wish I had the power to do it for you. But you have to do it for yourself the same way I did. Each of us has to take our responsibility seriously to ourselves and to others, those we love, those we care about, this world that we care about. And when we see that our own transformative work is directly related to our capacity to really be there for others, whether they're our family, our friends, our sangha, our community, our world, the things we are doing within our own mind take on a greater significance. So good. So. So before we get in, I just want to clarify. So somebody had a question. Fred, you showed us how to purify seeing from the seer. Could you also show us how to purify seeing from the object? What about purifying the experience from seeing? Who wrote this? Brian. Could you show me? You want to know, how do you purify seeing from the object? So, what is this?
Right. What? They call it a punch.
Just look. Don't think. Don't label. Just look. To purify the object means that you have no concepts, labels about it at all. You see it just as it is. In that instant, this object is purified. Right? To enter the world of name and form begins with labeling. Right? I like that. But if you want to call it a watch, at least that's just a name. Right. But as you start adding on, you are contaminating the purity of seeing. And you're contaminating this object, because this object has no characteristics within it that you're giving to it. Does it? No. You know, it doesn't know it's not a Rolex. You know? It doesn't know that it's better than a Timex, does it? It's just this. Leave it be. What was your other question? What was your purifying the experience from the seeing? What experience do you have that's outside of this seeing? Can you show me this experience that's separate from the seeing? So why do you talk this nonsense?
And even seeing is nonsense.
No, what you said is just nonsense. Seeing is just seeing. See, as soon as you call it nonsense, you're contaminating it. Even if you said it's not nonsensical, you're contaminating it. Let things be. You have a wonderful mind that is just aware and can touch things deeply just by penetrating it in wakefulness and presence. Is that clear? Right? You know, if you're a watchmaker, then you've got to get into the intricacies of this. Are you a watchmaker? No. So let it be. Are we clear? Good. So, Shapkar. So in his song 3, just by review, he calling us his beloved children. He said, no matter what system of mind training you practice, unless you realize the nature of your mind severing its root, you miss the point. And then again, he gave us questions. These questions are to purify the mind of all its wrong misconceptions. So again, where does mind, what is the origin of mind? Where does mind go? Where is mind right now? What are its shape? What are its size? What are its color? Does it move? Does it rest? What happens when thoughts occur? Where do they come from? Where do they go? What is their nature when you look right at them? Right? Does when thoughts move through the mind, does the mind itself move? Or does it not move? All these types of questions are the kind of questions which open us up to the way things really are. So he's got lots of questions. When a thought arises with its attendant emotion, investigate the source of the thought, the source of the emotion, its location, its color, its shape, its attributes. Look long and hard for these answers, to the answers to these questions. Examine your mind closely. persevere in your careful inquiry, examining your mind until you reach a positive conclusion that it is empty, pure, and utterly inexpressible. That it is a non-entity, free of birth, death, coming, and going. So these are words. Well, we'll go on to his next song. Again, my beloved daughters and sons, gather round and listen. So these are called songs, so he must have been singing. Again, my beloved sons and daughters and sons, gather round and listen during the analysis and examination of your minds in the matter that I told you. When you fail to find a mind, quote unquote, that you could point to and say, this is it. When you fail to find so much as an atom that you could call concrete, then your failure was a supreme success. This is the first test you've ever taken, where getting an F is an A. Is that clear? That shows you this is a very different realm of learning you've entered. Right. Investigating deeply into the nature of your mind, the workings of your mind and thoughts, looking directly for the self, the I, the me and mine, if you cannot find a trace of anything, if you've been a complete failure, then you have succeeded. Is that clear? If you have not reached that conclusion, continue on. Now, he says, firstly, mind has no origin since it's originally empty, and its essence is unsubstantial. And substantial means it's not a thing. You can't grab it. Can anybody grab this awareness? Can anybody grab their mind? Hold on to it. No. It has no substance. It has no location, no color, no shape. Finally, it does not move. Right? Right? Things move, right? Or appear to move, right? You know? Like, you, if I said to you, if you were sitting here and a herd of deer ran by, right? What would you say? Is your mind moving? No, the deer are moving, but your mind, your awareness, just is, right? Yes.
So if I'm in a room...
You're in a room right now.
I'm in a room, and someone walks in, and I'm absorbed in something. I may not hear them come in, but I can take my awareness and place it somewhere.
Listen to the way you're talking, as if your awareness is a thing that you take and you place. Is it a thing?
It's not a thing.
Is it? Is it?
It's not a thing.
Right.
But
how does it get from here to there?
That's what I'm asking.
Well, since it gets there in your own mind, it's an easy answer. You can find that out. Remember, this mind just flows. There's never a break. There's never an on and off. It is a constant stream of awareness. It's not a thing. Like, you know, it's here and now it's over here. That's thinking like it's a thing. It's not like that at all, is it? Is that your experience? Watch. Steve, could you just bang on the wall back there? Now, did you have to move your awareness back there?
No.
What happened?
It arose. The sound arose.
Arose in what?
In a mind. That
in this. In this. It arose. Just don't make a big deal about it.
Okay, but can I continue?
Yes, yes.
So, let's say everyone's talking.
Mm-hmm.
I can tune into that conversation without moving or that conversation.
When you say you can, what is the you that's moving around like that? I mean, the way you said that, I can tune into this conversation or I can tune into that conversation. What is this I that's doing all this tuning? Good. Find out. You may be surprised. Mind's nature is not created by a cause in the first place. It is not destroyed by an agent or condition at the end. It is a constant. It is constant. Nothing can be added or taken. This awareness that you have right now, this mind, what could you add to it? It's not like that at all, right? It's not a thing that you can add to or take away. It's already perfect, just the way it is. That is why it is called the great perfection. It is perfect just the way it is. What could you add to this? More awareness? Where do you get it from? I mean, it's just this. Since mind's nature is all-pervasive, the ground of both samsara and nirvana, it is without bias or partiality. This is very profound. In the usual way, we think about it, samsara is the world of delusion, the world of cause and effect, the world of chains, the world of suffering. That's all samsara. And what nirvana is, this... It's like Epcot or something. everything is just perfect. Right? But what he's saying here is these are just ideas of a samsara and nirvana. And where do all these impure states and pure states arise from? Our mind. The same mind. This mind has no bias, no partiality at all. It is free of all of that. It is undiluted in its nature. Right, Spence?
Absolutely.
Good. You got a little puzzled look on your
face. I'm not going out on a limb today.
All right. Again, you know, there are many analogies. You can just think of water, pure water that's coming down the stream. We can throw all kinds of pollutants into it. But that does not change the nature of water. And if you know how to purify or whatever, you can return that water to its pure state. Why can you do that? Because it never lost its nature. That is its nature. The nature of water is water. The nature of this mind is just this. You know? And you can put whatever you want into it. Right? You can put good thoughts into it, you can put bad thoughts into it, but that's all in the world of relativity in terms of cause and effect and what that creates. But from the point of view of our original nature, the nature of our mind, it makes no difference, does it? Right? Right? Does the movie screen care, you know, whether it's an A-rated movie or a B-rated movie or a C-rated movie or a D-rated movie that is being projected on the screen? Does it? No. That is the unconditioned nature of mind. In the conditioned nature of mind, there's samsara, there's nirvana, there's suffering, there's delusion, there's happiness, there's all these things that are projected. But in the nature of mind, this very awareness, none of that exists. It is important to understand that. Mind cannot be established or defined as anything at all specific, since it goes beyond the limits of existence and non-existence. Without coming and going, it is without birth, death, without clarity, and without obstruction. What could you say about this?
It
beyond worth.
It's beyond worth, because if you said, oh, it exists, well, it doesn't exist in terms of anything that we know as a thing. But to say it doesn't exist is not true, because, as Bill wisely pointed out, there's something here. So that is why we say it neither exists nor does it non-exist, which logically people go, ugh! You know, it's like the heart sutra, like what? It's form, it's empty, empty, it's form, from the form, you know what I mean? It's like, and that's what it's meant to do. That's why when you recite the Heart Sutra every day, what is the Heart Sutra? It's a complete nullification of the Buddha's teaching. Right? Right? Of everything. There's no Eightfold Path. There's no Four Noble Truths. There's no awakening. There's nothing. No thing. I mean, that's the sutras, in the Sutrayana. Right? It's saying the same thing. You're reciting it every day when you recite the Heart Sutra. It's the same truth. Right? The Heart Sutra is just as radical, you know, pulling the rug out of everything you believed in. Right? All the Buddha's teachings that he taught for 49 years, he nullified. His new leading to the biggest book. It's Avalokiteshvara, of course, an emanation who nullified. The nature of mind in its purity is like a stainless crystal ball. Its essence is emptiness. Its nature is clarity. And its responsiveness is a continuum. It never ends. Please experience that for yourself. Some of you have already gotten a taste, a glimpse into the empty nature of your mind, the no-thing nature of your mind. Right now, are you aware of this luminosity? How awareness is lighting this all up? How do we see? How do we hear? How do we know each other? And I'm not asking for a scientific explanation. I'm saying right now, this is an experience. Right? You shine your awareness on a thought, and right away it lights up that thought, and you can see the true nature of it, because it disappears. All your concepts, all your ideas, all your feelings, all your issues, as soon as you turn awareness right on it, immediately it reveals the true nature of what's going on. You don't have to do anything. And we'll learn a little more about that.
Right.
Yes.
You're talking about retreat.
Mm.
Basically, what you're saying.
That's another retreat.
Okay. So, what retreats, all these teachings become obstacles. These teachings become obstacles once we're trying to go to that state of what you call it, mind or no mind.
Again, you know, the Buddhist, again, you know, Buddhism is a very unique teaching in this world, right? Just for that reason, you know, the raft is not the shore, right? The pointing finger is not the moon, right? All these teachings are just skillful means the Buddha and the masters are using to get us to wake up. To move us in that direction, all the practices, all the teachings, moving us in a direction, right? And for those who follow direction right to the end, right? Not everybody follows it to the end, you know? Some people stop at base camp. You know, this has been an effort. The view isn't too bad here. God, that looks a little strenuous. I think I'll just rest here at base camp. Okay? A lot of people stop at base camp. But if you pursue it to the end, at the end, you know, what does it say? You know, your thinking mind cannot take that next step. Right? And that's what the Heart Sutra does. It is annihilating everything we've depended on up to now. What? There's no path? There's no attainment? You know what I mean? It's like, it's... But you know, but you've been dangling that candy in front of me for the last 40 years, right? And now you tell me there's no attainment? There's no enlightenment? You see what I'm saying? It's really quite profound the way the whole thing develops. Yes.
It's about the metaphor that reminds me like a mirror or something.
Mm-hmm.
It has a passive characteristic, but it fits the mind is not passive. I mean, it's an amazing thing to write out of.
Right. So again, the idea of a crystal is what? The crystal reflects everything, right? That's the idea behind it. That's why this mind is often compared. That reflecting of everything is its marvelous activity. Just because it's just standing, you know, sitting there on the altar, it doesn't mean it's passive. It's reflecting everything. This mind reflects everything. It doesn't comment. That chatter is coming from somewhere else. The waves. It's at the wave level, the level of cause and effect, that we make choices about good thoughts and bad thoughts, good actions and bad actions, good speech and negative speech. You know. But at this deeper level of our own mind, it is unconditioned. We have to understand that, because then it changes our relationship to thoughts. Coming back to the third Dzogchen Rinpoche, remember him. He also had a whole series of questions and examination. He also encouraged us to investigate our mind. Remember, with all those questions, but then he said at the end, when you have finished your searching for the time, then look into that which is searching. He added a very important piece. Again, in this deconstruction of all the things, of all the structures we think in a mind. Many people think, oh, I know what my mind is. It's the watcher, right? In many traditions, meditations, you know, you cultivate the watcher. Oh, is that my true mind? Is that my true self, the watcher? Well, that's could be. Right? Investigate it. Investigate it until you know. Does that watcher, is that watcher a separate mind? Does it have any separate existence? Is it a thing? So it is a process of deconstruction and 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 deconstruction. Can somebody take over for me? And deconstruction and deconstruction and deconstruction and deconstruction until you get for the moment where you have examined enough. And then what do? You rest there. And hopefully you have examined enough and deconstructed enough that not intellectually, but experientially, the mind has revealed its empty, open, spacious nature. The very nature of the mind. It is something to be experienced, not something to be thought and read about or talked about. Is that clear? It is something that you experience. So he says the same thing. Just continue on, continue on, continue on, continue on. And then he says an interesting thing, and then we'll go into resting in the natural state, which is where I want to go today. He says, the third Dzogchen Rinpoche, he says, practicing these mental preliminaries, this is what he calls this whole process of investigation, serves an ordinary function, a supreme function, and a sublime function. In an ordinary sense, again, this is this whole process of investigation. In an ordinary sense, it functions to reverse any intense clinging one may have to the ordinary mind, as well as to purify mental negativity must be a misspelling, as well as to purify mental negativity and pacify obstacles. So there is a result that you will experience from this practice. The ordinary mind is the mind of thinking, constructs, and concurrent emotionality. It is the mind that has issues. It is the mind that has problems, right? That mind, it is the mind of the self. All we put all that together and we say, that's me, okay? And we cling to it. So when you have done this examination and you really understand the nature of mind, nature of thoughts, that will stop your clinging, your grabbing, your grasping at all this mental phenomena that is arising in your mind. It functions to reverse any intense clinging we may have to the ordinary mind, and it purifies your mental activity and pacifies obstacles because you're not clinging anymore. You're letting things be. And you're not acting from as if your thoughts are real. Your thoughts about people are real. Your thoughts about situations are real. Your thoughts about yourself are real. Your memories are real. They are not real in any inherent sense. And you look right at them and you will see their nature. Its supreme function is to keep the mind from becoming involved with samsara, and to bring it to a state of liberation inseparable from the Dharmakaya. So even more so, when you continue to do this process that awakens your mind, and that you more deeply, deeply understand the nature of reality, and it becomes the way you function, you know, it keeps the mind from being involved in what? Samsara. All that world of activity that's going on, it means you're not, it doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean, oh, I'm not involved in it because I'm up here, right? Or I'm in a cave, or I stay home. No, I can go to work. I can be very active in my community, but I'm not involved in it because I see there's no inherent thing to be involved in that has any reason to cling to it at all. Because things are just arising in awareness. All my thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, etc., are all just arising in awareness and all have the nature of emptiness. So therefore, I don't go after it. Right? You know, when you're content at home, you don't always have to be going out. If you're not content at home, you know, it's always, let's go shopping. You know, let's go do something. Let's go out to eat. Let's make something happen. Right? Because we're not content. When you know your own mind and you touch the deep well-being and peace of your own mind, your own nature, the attractions of samsara, the baubles and bangles, are not attractive to you. Right? And if you are active in the world, you're active in the world on an entirely different criteria. Its sublime function results in the mind becoming inseparable from the enlightened mind of all Buddhas, which will bring about an infinite range of benefits for sentient beings. Ultimately, this mind becomes the mind of a Buddha. An awakened mind, a mind in which all the potentialities of its innate intelligence and wisdom and all the capacities it has have been fully developed. Fully developed from what? From this. The mind of the Buddha and the mind of sentient beings is the same mind. There's only this one mind. When you raise a deluded thought, you're a deluded being. When you I mean, it's not quite like this, but when you raise an enlightened thought, you're an enlightened being. When you see with the eye of the Buddha mind, you're seeing like a Buddha. When you see the mind, when you're seeing with a deluded mind, you're seeing the mind of delusion. It's not, it's the same mind. The origin is the same. The emptiness is the same. The Buddha has eyes just like us, except they're uncontaminated. Any questions? Because now we're going to move into resting in the natural state, which is sort of the part two of this practice. Okay? So everybody's clear. We establish ourselves in mindfulness. We spent a lot of time last night practicing establishing ourselves in wakefulness. We establish ourselves in this wakeful mind. We practice some degree of concentration to just stabilize that mind. And then we investigate, we look into, we search for. And we examine, deconstruct, until you reach a place where you have come to the end of your investigation and you can find no thing. When you arrive at that place where there's no thing, well, now we'll see what to do. Okay? So this section is called Resting in the Natural State. The teaching that concerns us here is resting in the natural state, which contains two divisions. The first covers the main practice of resting in the natural state, and the second addresses the process of revitalization. The main practice of resting in the natural state contains two further divisions, the purpose of resting in the natural state and the way to do so. So please listen closely. Concerning the first, the clear expanse, this must be some text, states, disturbances in the body, speech, and mind, and elements are released by resting in the natural state. As stated here, once you become worn out by practicing the physical, verbal, mental preliminaries that were taught, you should rest. Right? So when you're doing your examination, you've been working. Right? And working hard. You deserve some rest. That's your reward. And he quotes the Siddha Kotalipa, explains, "Let this weary traveler, the mind itself, rest in a state free of elaborations. The great seal, fresh, innate, natural, uncontrived." At this point of resting, you do not need to involve yourself in anything that disturbs the mind at all, and thereby creates any type of stress in the body, speech, or mind, or you don't need to involve yourself with any virtuous practices that are ordinarily considered appropriate. Instead, relax and let the three gates, that's body, speech, and mind, rest in their natural state. Are we okay up to now? We've already done some of this, okay? But this, understand, this is a very profound practice. Understanding the nature of mind and thoughts and self through direct investigation, as he said here, has three functions: ordinary, sublime, and supreme. But at the end of that, if we have this wonderful mind, this innate awareness that is uncontrived and unfabricated, let us reclaim it as our home. Let us reclaim it as our true home. How do we reclaim it? By learning to rest there. At the end of a long, hard day at work, isn't it nice to come home and just rest? Right? Just put your feet up, nothing to do. Isn't it nice, June, just to come home and rest? Nobody calling Dr. Fung this and Dr. Fung that, right? Isn't it nice just to rest, to have nothing to do? It's like that, except in a more profound way. All our activity, all our mental activity, all our thinking, all our issues, all our emotionality. Just rest. Okay? At this point, you should meditate by focusing your mind one pointedly on whatever manifests. Okay? So we're talking about, in this case, meditation, right? So, whatever, you're in this state of natural awareness, whatever arises, you're aware of it. Whatever manifests, regardless of whether it is a samsaric thought that would ordinarily be eliminated or a virtuous thought that would function as a remedy. So at this level, we got to understand we're at a different level of practice. Right? Many of us are used to the level of practice where what? Where it's remedies and antidotes. When I do this, I do that. If I want to get rid of this, I do that. I say to myself, let it be, Fred. Let it go. Right, Charlie? It's only a thought. Just let it go. What am I getting so upset about? Right? Right? That's in the world of remedies. Right? As our teacher Bunke says, that's like, you know, cleaning up blood with a rag dip in blood. We're just using more constructions to get rid of other instructions. And it works, but it's just part of the same deal. Right? So all the remedies we have used, all the antidotes we use to get rid of afflictive type of thoughts and emotions, and all the remedies we've used to create positive ones, you know, right? That's what we call ordinary practice. We're not doing that anymore. Okay? All the things you would normally do to eliminate, you don't do. This will bring about a fundamental transformation of these thoughts, turning the conceptual into the non-conceptual, just as murky water becomes clear on and it's all on its own when left untouched. Okay, is that clear? Right? If the water's murky, what do? You keep stirring it up to get rid of the murkiness? Right? You let it settle. If you go into the lake and you want to see the bottom, you know, you don't keep walking around. You have to what? Stop and let it settle by itself. Right? Can you see? By doing nothing, something happens. By itself. Right? You don't have to do it. Right? I mean, you could run home and get a lake purifier or something and, you know, and get rid of all the sediment, right? But why don't you just relax for a few moments and just let it settle by itself? That is its nature, right? All the heavy things will settle to the ground. Is that clear? This will bring about a fundamental transformation of the thoughts, turning the conceptual and the non-conceptual, just as murky water becomes clear all on its own when left untouched. Already, we have learned that when we look directly at a thought, a feeling, a memory, whatever kind of mental construct or fabrication it is, with the lion's gaze of just looking directly at it, it what? It disappears. If you do not feed it, if you do not chain and you just let it be, it disappears. This is what he means when he says the concept, turning the conceptual into the non-conceptual. And all you're doing is looking right at it. Right? You're not pushing it away. You're not manipulating it in any way. Is that clear? If you forcibly block your thoughts, which many people think that's what they're supposed to be doing, right? I don't like these thoughts, right? I don't like these fearful thoughts. I don't like these angry thoughts. I don't like these self-deprecating thoughts. I don't like, you know what I mean? We don't like these judgmental thoughts. So I got to do something about them, right? At this level of practice, you don't do that. You already have understood that all thoughts have the same nature. Good thoughts, bad thoughts, high thoughts, low thoughts. There's no difference. They're all just thoughts, and they all have the same nature. And all I need to do, see, it is my clinging to ideas about things that makes me think this is a good one, this is a bad one. They're all the same. And that's a profound view. That's why we need to cultivate the profound view, so then we can work this kind of practice. Okay. If you forcibly block your thoughts, not only will it make your mind restless, it will hinder a state of concentration from arising. If you forcibly block your thoughts, not only will it make your mind restless, it will hinder a state of concentration from arising. We are not interfering with the natural movement of the mind. In this case, thoughts. Thoughts are the natural movement of the mind. What we are doing is learning just to let them be. There's nothing to do at this level of practice. That's what we're going to be practicing.
Right?
Yes.
You mentioned the chaining that can occur if you're simply watching what arises.
The chaining will not occur. Please understand, your first thought is the production of your mind. Right? It is unconscious. Right? You sit there, and what do you see? One thought after another arises. That is just the natural activity, the play of the mind. Okay? As you've heard me say many times, practice begins with the second thought. What do you do next? First thought is a given. Whatever, good thought, bad thought, stupid thought. Right? It doesn't matter. That just, the mind just throws it up because of it's the way it's been conditioned. Okay? Now, if you're aware, if you're present, you see it, you look right at that first thought, and it will disappear. You don't have to worry about chaining. Hmm? Is that clear? Yeah, and again, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's the eighth thought. It's always the one that's right here. It doesn't matter, you know, it's nice to get it at the first thought. You know, but if you miss it and you get it at the 409th thought, as soon as you look at it, it's the same thing. Each thought is a discrete entity. It's a discrete phenomena that's arising in the mind in the present moment. And they're always the same. I mean, some people say, I think somebody was talking the other day, talking about icky thoughts or something like that. Well, it's an icky thought. I mean, what is an icky thought? They're all thoughts. The icky thought is just some kind of value we give it, which is not in it. We're clinging to it. We're making something out of it. They're just thoughts. They're just sounds. They're just sights. That's all they are. And the value we give them is what we are projecting onto reality, onto phenomena. Is that clear? The following passage from the Ornament of the Sutras taught why? Because correctly engaging in attachment and other such factors themselves brings complete liberation. Therefore, doing so brings complete emergence from that. Did you hear what he just said?
No.
Now, hold on. Hold on. I thought attachment is like the big no-no in Buddhism, right? Here he says, correctly engaging attachment and other such factors brings complete liberation. So it's a very profound, you're at the peak here. All of a sudden, all the things that we were taught are the afflictions, are the delusions, are now being called, what's it called? The path to liberation.
Use the word correctly.
Correctly. I'm glad you're paying attention. Right. All right. Now, this two-segment teaches a similar skillful approach. As attachment is what binds one to the world, attachment itself will bring liberation. What does that mean? So who has an attachment? Anybody have an attachment they want to just say? Attachment? Who has an attachment? Just say it. Just give me a nice attachment. Attachment?
To my teacher.
You're attached to your teacher. Now again, if you look directly into your mind where that, what you just verbalized just arose, when you look right at that attachment to your teacher, what do you see? Is there such a thing as attachment to your teacher in any real way? No. So that attachment, seen correctly, handled correctly, you liberate it. So you've liberated yourself from attachment. Because not by, I got to work on my attachment. You see, that's at the level of remedies and antidotes. I've got to really work on my attachment to my teacher. Because it's getting in the way, and I read somewhere it's not a good thing. Right? But at this level of practice, just by looking at whatever that is that you're calling your attachment, because it's arising in your mind, you see there's no thing there. There's no thing called an attachment. And in that sense, that attachment has now become the path of liberation. We don't have to be scared of anything anymore. See, at the level of remedies and antidotes, we're scared. Ooh, I don't want to go down that hole. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to think that. Right? You know, it's like our life, which means our mind, is just filled with mind holes. Mind holes. Mind holes. And mind holes. Anyhow, they're both interesting ways of looking at it. It's like it's a minefield. That's why many people, they have to so gingerly always work in there, gingerly. Gotta be careful not to get that one. I don't want to get that. God, I don't want that fear to come up again. I don't want to worry. I don't want to, I got to be careful of that one and get that one. Right? It's like all day long. Careful, careful, careful. Scared, scared, scared. What am I going to do? Okay? This is the practice of the lion. Or the lioness. Right? Right? There's nothing to be afraid of. Why is there nothing to be afraid of? Why is the Bodhisattva fearless? You heard that. Why is the Buddha fearless? Has no fear. Because they know that the nature of everything is the same. It's all empty. And so therefore, nothing disturbs it. Nothing scares it. Nothing worries it. It's not afraid. Because it knows how to handle everything correctly. Steve?
I want to make sure I understand the practice that you're describing here. So it's, we've done all the other stuff, and we've looked at things again and again until we've seen they're empty, and now something comes up in the mind, whatever it is, and we hold that one, whatever it come up, we just...
No, you don't hold it. You don't hold anything.
We concentrate on that.
You just look right at it. Single point. Just look right at it. It's there. Like right now, are you looking at me?
Yeah.
Are you looking at me single-pointedly? Okay, it's just this. It's not a lot of work. You just do it naturally, right? You're just looking at me. You're interested. You're just present. Don't make it into a thing.
How is that different than what we were doing yesterday when we looked at something and we saw it empty? Is it just the same thing again?
Where is that thought of yesterday? What yesterday are you talking about, Steve? Right now. Do you get it? Right now? What we're talking about? Good. See, look, you know, we juggle these things. Well, yesterday, what do you know about yesterday? Not a thing. It's just a memory. And we know most memories are distorted anyhow. The question is, right now, do you get it? Yeah. See, the mind, it's just like, it's nuts. That's why we don't want to cling to it. It's nuts. But if you know it's nuts, then you just let it be nuts. It doesn't matter. Right? Because you, okay. So, explaining the actual practice, and I'm skipping some things. So, but before that, let me just say, he defines natural state means uncontrived. Resting means simply denoting letting be in that state. Hence the term resting in the natural state. It's uncontrived. You're not creating anything. You're just resting in your natural state. Right? And you're just letting it be. You're letting everything be. You're not trying to control. You're not trying to name. You're not generating constructs. You're just letting things be. Right? And for most of us, just doing that like cold will last about a second. So that is why that whole process of establishing yourself in wakefulness, establishing yourself in concentration, doing the examination, can you see, is the preparation that brings you to that state where resting is more natural and easier. Is that clear? That's why it's a process. Yes.
So the person you meet on the street couldn't get there. You have to go through the entire process. It couldn't be explained to someone without them going through the process and being...
Well, I think, again, you could show somebody the nature of their mind pretty quickly, but again, it just wouldn't mean anything to people. Because, again, like we said earlier, it's the setting of the ring. To explain... this is now the actual practice. Begin by seating yourself in a comfortable cushion in either the cross-legged posture of the bodhisattvas or something like that. Just let your body be. Now, these are the instructions, okay? Just let your body be. Remain motionless, relaxed, and at ease. Do you want everybody to just try that? So whether you're sitting on a cushion or in a chair... And just let your body be, remain motionless, relaxed, at ease. Let your breath flow naturally, in a relaxed manner. And do not talk or say anything. Don't busy yourself with recitations, chanting, verbal activities. Just keep silent, and don't alter your breathing at all. Do not identify with any non-virtuous or neutral thoughts, or virtuous ones, of past, present, and future. That means whatever thoughts arise, don't identify them in any way as good thoughts, bad thoughts, neutral thoughts. He's referring to practices we might have done earlier. Don't identify them at all. Just let be. You're not trying to control your mind, your thoughts in any way. You're just very relaxed, aware, and you're just letting things be. Cultivating this basic alert wakefulness lucidity of your mind. You're doing it by just resting and let it be and let everything be. whatever appears to your mind, just see it, but do not cling to it at all. A thought arises, you see the thought, just let it be. See, that's the tricky one. That is why that preparatory work of really understanding the nature of thoughts, etc., is very helpful, because you're not attracted by them. That's why he says again, you know, good thought, you know, why are we attracted? Because it's a good thought. Why are we repelled? Because it's a bad thought. But we're not doing any of that. So it takes practice. Way you are purifying your own mind of all its misconceptions, all its clingings, and you're purifying all your senses, because you're just allowing things to be, sounds just to be sounds, sights just to be sights, taste just to be tastes, sensations just to be sensations, thoughts just to be thoughts, feelings just to be feelings. There's no, you let go of the I, the self as the central controller, judging everything that arises. Just relax. It's good to do this practice with the eyes open, looking straight ahead. As we demonstrated last night, that practice just of wakefulness. Your eyes are open, all your senses are open, your mind is open and relaxed. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, nowhere to go, nothing to do. Just relaxed right here, but aware. And you maintain that lucid awareness as long as you can. When you feel it's beginning to slip away, and it's getting, either your mind is getting a little tired, or you've been taken over by thoughts or something, then just, you know, close your eyes a moment. Right? Relax. And then just begin again. And so it's a continuation. Again, because of endless decades of constant mental activity that we have been attached to and clung to and identified with, and without any experience of this uncontrived, unconstructed, relaxed, aware mind, at this point it is not comfortable to us. So you may find after a few moments, the mind wants to get active again. Right? And that's okay. That's just, you know, that's just its conditioning. But we want to learn, once we've recognized this natural mind of ours, we want to learn to cultivate it. But again, it's a process. So that's why when you have lost it, so to speak, just relax a moment, close your eyes. Just begin the process again. formal practice, and then in post-formal practice, when you're going about during the retreat, cultivate, as we demonstrated yesterday, just this natural wakefulness. Right? That you're just very alert. Right? We want to wake up this mind, wake up this awareness. Right? Seeing, hearing, it's all part of it. Tasting. When you get lost in distraction, which means you've gotten lost in the chaining of concepts, as soon as you see it, you're awake. You don't have to do anything. Just, you're wakeful. It's right here. So you don't need to work your way back here. It's right here. Just continue in wakefulness. Any questions?
I just wanted to be sure that I got that attachment part at the in the final stage. So when attachment arises and we just see it, and because of the relaxed state, it's just like, it just goes.
Well, it doesn't go because you're in the relaxed state. It goes because there's no such thing as attachment in any intrinsic way.
Okay.
So think about your biggest attachment. What's your biggest attachment? Just give one.
Probably having people think I'm a good person.
Okay, so you're very attached to having people, right? So that attachment is really a thought that you identify with and believe is true. Okay? But if you look, just close your eyes a second. If you just look at that, you know, just put it up there, right? I am attached to people thinking I'm a good person. I am aversive to people thinking I'm a bad person. Now, when you look right at those thoughts, that construct, what happens? Just what? What is it?
Well, it's just a thought.
Yeah. And when you look right at it, what does it do? Does it really get big and ugly?
No.
Grab you? What does it do?
Now it just seems kind of silly.
That's getting better. I mean, you know, take your worst, just try this. Everybody, take your worst whatever, your worst attachment, your worst fear. And say it in your mind very slowly. Like, Spence, what's yours? We'll just use you as an example. Yours could be what?
Your worst thing.
Your worst fear, your worst, I don't know. All right. So we're not talking about the actuality of that. We're talking about it as a thought, as an attachment. So if you said very slowly, eating car, bow, hydrate, does it have the same sting as when you usually think about eating carbohydrates? No. I mean, you still probably shouldn't eat carbohydrates, but we're talking about the mind. We're talking about its fears, its attachments, its aversions. They're all just constructs. And when you look right at them, you can liberate them. That's why it's said in this tradition, the path of obscuration is the path of liberation, if you take it as such. Because what is the nature of all your obscurations? Emptiness. None of them are real. Your worst fears, your angers, your hurts, your childhood stories, they're all just fabrications at this point.
When you're in this state and something comes up, maybe an attachment, and you look at it and it goes away, is this an opportunity for insights, or do we...
No, this is beyond all that. This is after you've done everything else and you've done the examination. This is not that. This is learning there is another way to liberate yourself from your attachments. Up to now, you think the way you're going to liberate yourself from your attachments is what?
Think your way through it.
Yeah, think your way through it. Use logic, use this, use that, use an antidote. Right, that's always the way you thought you have to free yourself from attachments. At this path, you're just letting it be. It's beyond all that. It's a direct path. Right? As you know, in The Better Way to Handle a Snake, it's like, you don't grab the snake. You grab the snake, you have a problem. Right? Just let it be. That's the way you solve the problem of the snake. Be patient. It'll go. Because it's its nature to go. Eventually it'll uncurl itself and move away. That is the nature of all our thoughts. Because they are all characterized by insubstantiability and impermanence and non-self, they all just come and go. Right? That is their... It's not because you're a great practitioner. It's because that is their nature. Just let... So in this practice, you're just letting things be by maintaining awareness, right? And that view that just looks right at things, does not do anything, and it will disappear. In that moment, you have liberated yourself. Over time, nothing can harm you.
Yeah, when I was in that state, I was thinking, well, what if there's an insight that I wasn't getting anyway, so it wasn't coming out?
You know what? What do you need another insight for? I mean, it's like, can you see this acquisitive mind of ours? Oh, I need another insight. Just let go. Is there anything wrong with this moment? But if you're not careful, the mind of discontentment will always tell you there's something else I need. Your mind is innately Buddha. Do you hear that? Innately. You didn't manufacture it. You can't manufacture it. It's right here. Let it be. That's hard for us. We think we got to do something. But it's not that way. Okay, final question is just about practice. Yes? Yes, 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 yes.
Time is short.
Yeah.
I just want to say this, the five remembrances, doesn't it speak to the non-attachment and how liberating it can be to accept?
But this is not acceptance like, that's another remedy. I accept.
And the five remembrances.
Yeah, I accept because the five remembrances. If you know how to accept everything just as it is in the moment, you don't need the five remembrances. Because when sickness arises, you're present to it just as sickness. When old age arises, you're just present to it as old age. And when death arises, you're just present to that at that. You don't need the five remembrances. You're now, because you're no longer... Anyhow, it's like that. Yes.
In the realm of sensation, So if I understand this, that we shouldn't label it fear, we should, if there arising sensation in the body, which I normally would go, oh, fear. So do we avoid labeling it?
Yes, just let it be. All right, just let it be. Just directly, don't call it anything. Don't try to manipulate it. Don't try to get it to go away. Don't do anything. It's hard. Just let it be. And you're just, again, you've already established yourself in this open, relaxed mind. That's what you're maintaining. And you're just letting this stuff arise. Sensations arise, thoughts arise, sounds arise. It doesn't matter. You're relaxed. Yeah, the mind, remember the play of the mind. One minute it'll throw up happiness and Next minute I'll throw up fear. You know, it just... Don't be bothered by it. It is the mind itself that's playing. Fear is not a separate thing from your mind. It's just your mind playing around. Goofy mind. Somebody else? Yes.
I'm trying to understand whether there's the practice of cultivating wakefulness basically is going to take me to the same resting awareness as the practice of investigating the other thoughts.
In a certain way, we could say that the mind of wakefulness is the uncontrived mind of our natural awareness, okay? The problem is, for most of us, we have spent, I don't know about lifetimes, but along with these very strong conscious-unconscious beliefs in the solidity of our experience, right? And so this must be broken up. And we break it up through investigation. They go together. That's why they're put together this way. Right? You can... You should do both. Because again, the problem with people who just go on the wakeful path, you know, and they just say, oh, I'm just, you know, sitting in emptiness, or I'm just sitting in clear awareness. You know, lots of people think that. They get these practices. But they can't do that. Because all their emotional stuff and, you know, and all their conditioning is still so active. So unless you really have insight into the nature of thoughts, the nature of mind, the nature of self, it is almost impossible to maintain a lucid awareness, you know, or else you'll have a lucid awareness but still have a miserable life. But you'll have a lot of lucid awareness in your misery.
Separate practices. There's the investigation practice.
Right. The investigation practice brings us to this open awareness, resting. What she's saying, at the same time, there is this practice we practice of just being wakeful, which has a lot to do with our natural uncontrived mind. But it usually, that's, you know, that's kind of what they call post-meditation. So we're doing something now that's a formal practice. It's something we're doing in the meditation hall. This is a formal practice. Right, we're doing this investigation. And again, you know, you can do it sitting on a rock, but it's a formal meditation practice. In the Dzogchen, they really talk about formal practice and what they call post-meditation practice. So we might say, in post-meditation practice, maintain a continual state of wakefulness. Right? In post-meditation practice, see all your experiences dreamlike. You know, without any substance, just arising and passing. Just like in a dream. So these will be like post-meditation instructions. So we have 12 minutes. Please enjoy your lunch, enjoy your walking, enjoy your practice today. Again, today is day 5. So again, 5 and 6 are really our last 2 full days of practice. 7 is, just half day. And again, we're really focusing more on post-meditative practice. So, you know, everybody has worked hard, right? But there's been a lot of support. We can take away some of the support. You've got lots of teachings, lots of practices. And, you know, just be patient, be diligent. Don't make a big deal about it. Just persistence, okay? Enjoy it.